Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 10 minutes in, and Nick Tamaro standing by. Frank Hoff is going to join us as well from Sam Houston Race Park, SHRP, ready to kick off the season tomorrow. And even though Nick had already called some quarter horse races, this is technically the start of his full-time. Is it full-time or part-time? I guess it's full part-time. Race calling career.
Full time.
You're going to be there every day, right? Every day there's racing.
I will certainly. I'm certainly planning to be there every day there's racing. Yeah, no question about that.
You feel in good form. You had some fairgrounds trialed and got a little practice in to get the vocal cords in shape.
You know, I never actually was able to make it to the fairgrounds. I came down with a little bug and so couldn't go, and I'm on the opposite end of it now. So I've done a little home prep and as much as you can do in that regard. But, yeah, I think I'll be all right. We'll make it through the first week, and everybody can assess the damage and see where we can make some improvements moving forward.
Well, don't worry. There's a whole website devoted to nothing but the critiquing race callers, it seems.
I've seen this place. It seems very, very interesting. Not a lot of fun, but yeah, there's a few different ones. And then, you know, there's another one where if you give out picks of any type or bets of a certain type, that those get critiqued as well. So that should be interesting too. We'll see how the public takes to the handicapping stylings of the one and only Trey Styles, which will begin tomorrow as well.
Well, and certainly Frank Hoff joins us now, too, from Sam Houston. And Frank has been very aggressive in making sure that there's opinions and insights and the addition of Trey, Chris Griffin before his departure to Philly. He was interacting, and the communications part and the interaction for players there's been a clear dedication from Sam Houston. And Frank, good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning, guys. Happy New Year. Hope everyone's doing well.
Well, I hope you had a nice holiday. It's funny because when you think about the venues that open at this time of year, it's tough to have a relaxed Christmas and a holiday season because, you know, those last minute arrangements are being done, to get the meet kicked off. And here you are and ready to go. Talk about the off season and what we can look forward to from a management perspective.
Yeah, so we had a little bit shorter off season than we normally have had few years here with the extension of the Retama quarter horse meet. So it was a quicker turnaround than we're used to, but teams working real hard and doing a lot of last minute fix ups and getting the place ready to go for tomorrow afternoon. So we're looking forward to it. We've gotten great response again from the horsemen. The horse players are certainly. Certainly communicating, talking about what we're doing. We're excited to have Nick on board and what he's going to bring. We're just ready to get going tomorrow. That's for sure.
Nick, from a preparation standpoint and looking over these first three cards, you're, I suppose, your preparation is slightly is slightly different, right? Because you're undoubtedly opening those PPs and you're looking at it from a handicapping angle, but I suppose at the same time, you're getting a sense for how races are going to unfold, right, as you handicap.
Yes, I've completed preparations A through G. We're now at preparation H. All kidding aside, I'm looking at it a little bit more in depth. I talked a little bit to Ron Flatter about this when I was interviewed on Monday, and I said to him, I would have a very hard time calling a race that I hadn't handicapped. And, I mean, even with the quarter horses, I had handicapped those pretty thoroughly and watched a lot of replays, had seen a lot of the live races and cataloged everything that I had seen, you know, in my own mind. And I think that helps because I do think it will increase the amount that I can describe what's going on in a learned and interesting way based on what I have a pretty good sense of happening. So, you know, for example, if you have a big favorite, and obviously we'll be saddled with a couple of big favorites as the weekend goes on, not too many. I think the racing is pretty competitive all in all. But, you know, if one of those horses breaks slowly or one of them doesn't show speed like they're supposed to, or, you know, one of them is fading on the backstretch, those are the kind of things that the public needs to know pretty readily. So, yeah, it's making the morning line, putting out a tip sheet, going on TV, calling the races. It's all a package deal, and I'm ready to do all of it. So I'm actually almost done handicapping the first three cards, and the morning lines obviously are in, so everything's final. Everybody out there can be sure that we go final the day after draw day. So plenty of time to critique morning lines and get ready.
On that topic too, the way the schedule unfolds, Frank, lay out the race days and let's give everybody an alert on the big weekends.
Yeah, so we'll for the month of January, we'll run a Thursday, Friday, Saturday schedule. Thursdays will be 4 o'clock, and Friday and Saturdays will start around 6:45. And then on January 30th will be the Houston Racing Festival. That's our only Sunday card. That's scheduled to go start at 1:45. So that's going to have the six stake races highlighted by the Grade 3 Ladies Classic and the John B. Conley Turf Cup. We also have the three-year-old turf race that we renamed after Bob Bork, who was the president here at Sam Houston for a long time. And that will be the Bob Bork Texas Turf Mile. And then when we get into February 16th, we will actually start running Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Wednesdays will be at 4 o'clock as well. And we'll do that all the way up to April 9th. So we've got 50 days of thoroughbred, so it's the longest meet we've probably run in 10 to 12 years. So a lot of things coming, a lot more excitement coming from Houston, that's for sure.
The menu, and I'm just trying to compare to previous. No, Nick, no real changes in the way the wagering menu lays out, is there?
I don't want to steal Frank's thunder, but two, I would call them one adjustment, one change. The jackpot high five, the Houston high five, is going to be offered on races 3 and 10 now, or 3 and the last, if it's a 9-race card, rather than 5 and 10. And additionally, the exacta takeout has been dropped to 20%. So that's 1% down, a little bit of an acknowledgement to the horse players. While understanding also that nobody offers the volume of low takeout wagers that Sam Houston does in terms of every multi-race bet being at a 12% price point, you're not going to find that anywhere. And even though some of our friends to the north have put in low takeout pick fives or wagers like that, we have a low takeout pick five. We have a low takeout pick six also, pick three, four, and daily doubles.
So any, virtually all the multis, I'm glad you reminded me of that, actually. Because
every multi is a 12% takeout, yep.
Yeah. It's been, and the Space City, the format?
Space City format is going to be same as last year after the jackpot component was removed. It's a 50-cent minimum, and 75% is paid out. Is that right, Frank? 75% is paid out in the main pool, 25% to the carryover if there is not one winning ticket.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah,
we had some fun with that last year. We had that was a lot of fun when those carryovers popped up.
Yeah, I think there should be some opportunities for mid five figure carryovers, especially after 3-4 days. We had a $10,000 carryover during the Corner Wars last year, which was about 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. But still, it'll grow. It'll grow gradually and. A lot of nights, I think you'll have an opportunity in a race or two to narrow it down.
The talk about the the backstretch, Frank, and the horsemen and the jockey colony. Any new faces, or I'm just kind of looking up and down. It feels like a classic SHRP backstretch.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty similar than what we've had the last couple of years. We do have a couple new guys coming down from Oklahoma that have not participated here in the last few years. So we welcome them. We certainly did get a lot of interest, and just how things kind of play out with the schedule and stuff like that. But we're hoping to continue to grow that as we move along. So I think from a better standpoint, if you follow, Lone Star and Remington, you're certainly going to see similar faces that were running at those meets, and we'll get some guys that'll come over from Fairgrounds and possibly Oaklawn. So yeah, there's a lot to follow in this region, especially if you do handicap. So it's going to be we're looking forward to it. Everyone's ready to go. People have brought in better horses to come down here. It's getting it's getting more competitive than it has been. So, I think players should be happy with what we're offering down here now.
Frank, what's the daily average purse?
Daily average purse is going to be right around 200.
Nice.
A day. Our goal is to run 10 races a day if we can, 9 at the minimum. So, we've got money. We're ready to spread it around to the horsemen and then keep the horse players happy as well. So
in addition, obviously we're all focused on the simulcast side, and we'll have plenty of visits with Nick and with Trey, but what's the on-track attendance scenario, and is any restrictions right now? Everybody's kind of back on alert. Where do you stand on people attending?
Yeah, so there are right now. There's no restrictions in Harris County, so we're good there. Obviously, we're going. We recommend that our customers, along with our staff, are being careful and wearing masks when possible if they can't social distance. There's no restrictions. We still got some social distancing throughout the facility with betting machines and some of the table settings in our restaurants. But other than that, we are. We're going to expect hopefully some nice crowds. We've got pretty nice weather for tomorrow and Friday. And, I think once the season continues, I think we'll, hopefully get back to the numbers we had pre-COVID for sure, if not a little bit better.
Well, and let's hope that the winter weather is milder than last year. Which was as difficult and insane as anybody.
It's almost a certainty that it will be milder than last year.
Yeah, you would like to think, Nick. In terms of those that are, frankly, going to be drawn to the Signal because of your presence and Trey and the the help that they'll get from you guys. And I should mention. Jessica, too, right? Jessica Paquette?
Yes, Jessica Paquette is coming down for opening weekend. She'll be here Friday and Saturday. She'll be here for Houston Ladies Classic for the Racing Festival. She'll be here for Texas Champions Preview and Texas Champions Day as well. So she'll be present here at least four times, and she'll be giving out her thoughts on social media and via the SHRP Racing Twitter account, as well as giving out some Pick 4 tickets. So absolutely, you'll be able to find Jessica's analysis pretty readily.
Well, and in terms of news, Martha Clausen's work as a turf publicist is as good as anywhere in the country for, you know, for a track like Sam Houston that's got a fairly unique carve out of a season, to have someone like Martha producing daily track notes is invaluable. So visit the website for that, and you can also follow Martha on Twitter, because the coverage from that standpoint is more than you typically would get from a regional season like this. In terms of the way we look at these races, Nick, give everybody a little bit of a primer on the sprint layouts and the two turn layouts, the way the races are typically carded.
Yeah, pretty standard 1 mile dirt track setup. You're going to see the majority of the races run really between 5.5 and 6 furlongs and then a mile. And no pronounced. I'm not generally somebody that likes to talk about track bias unless it presents itself. There's never been a prolonged. It's been years since there was a prolonged track bias of any type at Sam Houston, and I credit Frank and his staff for making sure that the surface has stayed very fair. Obviously, the turf is great, and we're going to see an increase in turf racing as the meet goes by. First couple of weeks will be a little bit light. We've had some less than favorable weather for grass growing, in the sense that you get your turf seeded for winter, and you're not ready for 20 days of 80-plus degree temperatures. So see a little bit more of that in probably week 3 moving forward. But what you're going to get on the racetrack is a lot of Steve Asmussen, a lot of Carl Broberg, a lot of Austin Gustafson. You're going to see some Robertino Diodoro, J.R. Caldwell. Had a very, very good 2021 meet at Sam Houston. And you're going to see those guys, their horses are going to get bet a lot. Asmussen especially, when I make the morning line, every time I settle on an Asmussen horse, I click them down another notch or two, just because of the way the public supports them. So it'll be challenging in some races to beat him, but you want to pick your spots carefully. Austin Gustafson has at least 3 morning line favorites on Friday night, so I think he'll be pretty well represented as well. So I think you're going to get a competitive product, no question about it, and I think field size will increase as we get into the meet a little bit, and it really presents a lot of great opportunities for the player.
You know, I know, looking at last year's last season, and I'm just looking at some of the outfits that had fewer starts, and I see Todd Fincher actually had a terrific meet with 45 starters, but that may have been in part because of what was going on in New Mexico. Is Fincher back this year?
He is not.
Todd is not here. He has a few horses that he's going to be sending over for some races, but he's over at Sunland this year, but I think we may see him a little bit more during this season and possibly next year.
Yeah, because New Mexico was a complete mess at the time, and so I kind of figured that he, but he came to town and did very well. 12 winners from 45 starters, and then there's some names actually that from again limited starters that is not going to be that familiar to people. Kevin Scholl was 6 for 26 with another 9 board hits, and how about Karen Jacks, 12 for 55? So obviously there's some smaller outfits that poach wins. And, when you have the kinds of barns, that you just laid out, Nick, the Asmussen, Diodoro, J.R. Caldwell, that are going to send, a phalanx of horses. I mean, Asmussen had 310 starters at the meet last year. There's going to be some under-the-radar types that poach some wins.
Absolutely. There still are some wins to go around, right? And I think that's what everybody's trying to pick up on a little bit, and I think there'll be an opportunity to do it. So, yeah, that's that's where everybody else fits in. And, you know, even though a guy like Todd Fincher's not back, I think there's a few barns to replace him and stay competitive because the money's good. You know, and all of this conversation, we're having this conversation because of the horse industry escrow account and the measures that were put in place 3 years ago to really stabilize the industry in Texas, because things were not going the right direction prior to 2020. And we were really given a big lifeline there, and it's turned things around quite a bit. And, you know, the guys that have been supportive, the guys and gals that have been supportive all along, we really appreciate. It's led to an influx of new business and new business on both ends, not only horsemen, but horse players. And, you know, that's how you really try and create a program. So I think Frank's been on the cutting edge of that. Sam Houston was the first of the, really, there's only two thoroughbred tracks left in Texas, but Sam Houston before Lone Star kind of got an influx of the new money and tried to spend it, paying a lot of attention to what really works and what makes things tick. And I think it's really taken off.
Well, and for those that don't know the reference here, the point of reference, without gaming, I mean, here was Texas surrounded by New Mexico and Louisiana and Oklahoma that all had gaming and it needed something. And I never actually heard a name that came forward associated with the concept of siphoning sales tax on anything equine related in the state and using it as a funding mechanism. And it was brilliant. And it's been just exactly much like in Maryland, where they didn't need an avalanche of money. They just needed a buffer. And it the same exact scenario has really reinforced racing in Maryland, and this righted the ship and balanced things out. And I remember Steve Asmussen when it was happening, Steve talked about it and you know, basically said it's a relief to be able to, you know that you could run. And for, you know, people that breed Texas breds and you know, want to race at home, it's been a godsend.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's exactly what it's been. And what you've seen is that there's now been a kind of commensurate investment from the industry in it, not only in the form of an increase in handle, but also look at there's been an influx of stallions to Texas, which is really going to solidify the Texas bred program. And that's going to be the biggest part of it and the biggest thing that matters really moving forward, because we're going to now have, as stallions just left Texas and the Texas breeding program became largely irrelevant, you know, that's where the backbone of your individual industry in your state really resides. And so, you know, now that there's going to continue to be an increased investment in that from people beyond, you know, just the Farish family, but some others, I think it's going to make a big difference. And you're going to see Texas bred stay very competitive on the national landscape. And you're going to see the racing stay strong. I mean, you know, this is a state where going back 15 years after Lone Star hosted the Breeders' Cup and Sam Houston was widely regarded as the fastest growing racetrack in America, you know, things were on an upward trajectory here. And that stopped as literally every surrounding state had some type of alternative gaming. And the political landscape in Texas made that impossible. Now, you know, fast forward 20 years and we have this reinvestment based on an escrow account of funds that belong in the racing industry. Additionally, we have a changing political landscape here. So I think we're going to see the opportunity for alternative gaming and or sports betting and things like that really develop. In the meantime, I think I'm not speaking out of turn to say that we're really happy with the way things have gone and the opportunities it presents.
Well, finally, one other element to include is the jockey colony. And I just looked up the first couple of days to see who may be new in town or who is not around. I know Ray Lou is not around, right? He was among the leaders last year, but Stuart Elliott, Rye Eichelberry, Leandro Goncalves, Lane Luzzi. I don't see Lindy
Richard
Wade's
Aramia
name.
Is new.
Richard Aramia. How
Richard
about that?
Richard Aramia and Gerardo Mora are sort of old new if that makes sense. They're both former Sam Houston regulars and both former Sam Houston riding title winners, and they're both back. Jose Santos Jr., jockey agent to the Stars, is represented by Lane Luzzi, Rye Eichelberry, and Freddie Monrique. You obviously have Stuart Elliott, the journeyman, who was the leading jockey last year, had 62 wins. He'll win a lot of races again this year. And they're going to be the principals for sure. Leandro Goncalves really had a kind of a career resurgence last year at Sam Houston, had a really phenomenal meet, and went on to have a very, very good 2021. So, yeah, it's a good colony, good solid group. You know, some journeyman types that have been around and joined the colony in the last few years. Jose Alvarez, Ernesto Valdez Jimenez, who's been a Texas regular. Jansen Malanson has mounted the first few nights. So does Carlos Montalvo, who has ridden in a lot of different places. And I've always felt like was really solid. Hopefully he's found a place down here in the Mid-South.
Well, it looks like, just looking tomorrow night, he's got at least, a second choice or a now favorite in the nightcap for Villafranco. I see Wesley Hamilton in here. There'll be a few names.
Wesley Hamilton is there again. I think this is his second straight year. Danny Sorensen, of course, veteran.
Danny Sorensen, yeah.
He's been around forever. Eduardo Perez, who more affectionately known as Eddie, who'll be there. He's riding a lot of the Villafranco horses. So, yeah, Danny Caldwell was one worth mentioning. Not a trainer, but Danny Caldwell has a pretty decent amount of horses that he has sent down with Martin Villafranco, mainly Oklahoma breds or Oklahoma, I don't want to say evacuees, but Oklahoma alums that are now racing there.
I see Sasha Risen.
Even I have trouble finding a word that I see.
Sasha Risenhoover on board too, it looks like.
Sasha Risenhoover, who's been a Sam Houston regular on and off for years. So, yeah, it's an interesting group. And, you know, I mean, quite honestly, it's nice of everybody to have more or less conceded the January opening to us, because nobody's opening in January anymore. Oakland's already open. And today would have been good piece of racing trivia history. Today would have been traditional opening day at Gulfstream. There is no more opening day at Gulfstream because they're open every day.
Yeah.
But January 5th was always the opening day at Gulfstream, regardless of what day of the week it was.
I don't see one thing I don't see here in the first couple of days is a bug. There's no bugs.
There is a bug whose name is, he has a hyphenated name of Hispanic origin, Benitez, Camacho Benitez. So I believe it's Samuel Camacho Benitez. He has had very limited mounts. We'll see if he can hold up. But yeah, Sam Houston has generally not been a great place for a bug because the journeymen generally have been pretty well entrenched. But we'll see if young Mr. Camacho Benitez can make some strides.
I don't know how many more boxer names they could have put in there, actually. That's a great name.
Macho.
Exactly.
Macho.
I love it. Yeah. I know. That kid deserves mounts, just a name alone. Camacho Benitez.
No question about it.
Start time, 4 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Eastern. So it's that mid-afternoon sweet spot between the East Coast and West Coast.
Yes, very much so. It'll be 4 o'clock on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Wednesdays will kick in mid-February. But, yeah, Thursdays, 4 o'clock Central Time, which you can make the necessary adjustments for your respective time zone. And Friday and Saturday is 6:45. So we will be on the air 1 hour before each night with Sharpie Time. I'm going to host it, fly solo tomorrow. Trey Stiles and Jessica Paquette will do it Friday and Saturday, and then Trey and I will get started again next Thursday. So you can watch us there and get our ideas and thoughts on the card.
Are you actually calling it Sharpie Time?
It is referred to as Sharpie Time, yeah, S-H-R-P, lowercase e, time.
Very clever. Have you managed to get...
That's a Chris Griffin invention. I will properly... I do like to give the attribution where it's necessary, but that was a Chris Griffin invention, as far as I know. I don't know. Frank can take credit for it now, though. Chris is gone.
Well, Frank, you got to get the marketing people to get a sponsorship from Sharpie.
You know, I've thought about that, and yeah, no, Chris came up with that idea on his own. So, you know, I certainly gave him some stuff about it, but yeah, I think we probably should try to reach out to Sharpie and see what we can do. But yeah, the name is all credit to Mr. Griffin, that's for sure.
It's very clever, and all of us use Sharpies, at least a lot of us, to highlight. I got one right in my hand right now. I've got a Sharpie highlighter it's very clever. I love it. I love
very,
it.
Very, very clever. I think there'll be plenty of nights where it sounds and looks more like Dolly time, but it'll be Sharpie time if by name.
No, you don't want it to be square time. We want all the sharps, and the squares can play elsewhere. Best of luck, Nick. So excited for you, and we'll have plenty of spot plays and analysis and multi-race ideas between you and me and Trey and visits on air and at our website. We'll have the analysis posted too on a pretty regular basis. So excited for the SHRP season to get going, and hoping I can work in a trip later in the meet.
We'd love to have you, Steve. Thanks for having us, and look forward to everybody joining on board betting and listening and watching, and be a lot of fun.
Frank Hopf and Nick Tamro, NTAM 1215. Frank, thanks so much. Best of luck to everybody on the team down there.
We appreciate it, sir, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Absolutely. Frank Hopf, and who I was nice enough to and delighted to meet face-to-face. Sometimes you have relationships in the sport where you got people that, you know, you talk to on a regular basis, either on air or on the phone or whatever, email and texting and so forth, and you don't, you know, you don't have occasion to meet him. So we got to see and meet Frank at Arizona, which was cool. We will stay here. We got about 15 minutes, and Seth Merrow will swing in. We'll get Seth's first visit, and Seth, I texted with Seth actually through the holidays, and I was hoping I was going to see him. I wanted to have a Christmas week kind of a lunch. Because I've got, as it happens, as Casey's going to dial him now, I've got a present for a couple of presents for Seth. I mailed some of them to him. Every year I get him a really cool calendar by an artist from Maine named Alain Claude, which is about as Acadian a name as you're going to find. You know, the Quebecers that came down across the border and settled in Maine. And Tina and I found his art at the Big E in the Maine Pavilion. And he's got a style that I just love. It's very similar, in fact, to Greg Montgomery, you know, that bright tonal quality. And we bought the first calendar from him at the Big E, and then the last couple of years we've ordered them. So I've ordered one for Seth the last couple of years. So I mailed that to him, but I have a package. The team at Country Life Farm in Maryland, our friend Sally Ellen. Sally Ellen sent a gift package for Seth. And she didn't send me. She sent me some you know, the COVID, the antibacterial with stuff. But she sent a beautiful hats and there's a tie based on the box because they love Seth Merrow, who joins us now. Happy New Year.
Happy holidays. Yes, and I sent Sally Ellen a thank you card yesterday, in fact, because she mentioned the tie in her letter, and that had a story attached to it that she'd bought it for her husband who passed away. And so from listening to the show, she she knew it was an appropriate gift to send on to somebody else. And so I said I was honored to get it, and I said I'll wear it in honor of her husband on on the show with you in the summertime, if not before. But I really appreciated the thought and appreciated your sending on the early stuff. And so, yeah, fun little holiday in the calendar. Appreciate that. I am loaded with the calendars. I got one at work. I got a couple. I have a NYRA calendar. I have, of course, the annual Clancy Brothers ST Publishing calendar. And I always like your calendar, the reminder of Maine with the light. It is a beautiful calendar every year.
And you mentioned the thisishorseracing.com. I got one yesterday or day before. And it's the first time I've gotten one. And so thank you to the guys. We'll talk to them tomorrow, at least one of them. And the first month, the January, is Whitmore. And the minute I opened it, I immediately realized where the picture was taken. And it's something that most people don't see very often, which is the Stakes Barn quad across the street from the track on Lincoln. And you know, it's a very funny spot, those barns that are behind Ciro's, that includes the Stakes Barn. And it always struck me, Seth, that it was a funny place to have the stake horses, because certainly on Thursday, right, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, there's a hubbub going on at Ciro's. There used to be that was loud and raucous.
Yeah, it's not quite as crazy as it used to be, but still on the weekends, there's still a band there usually. So you're right.
Yep.
But obviously the Stake Barn was there first, and it's just the party built up around them. But yeah, it is, if folks have never been over in that direction, or if folks after the track think, hey, we've heard about Ciro's, go over to Ciro's, just kind of walk around the, not even around the corner, just take a look next door at the Stake Barn. It is kind of an interesting, little piece of Saratoga racetrack history, as I say, that area has been there for years. I actually, this past year, did a kind of a taped interview for one of my Saturday morning shows. Went over there and taped Ron Maquette and his wife at the Stake Barn, talking a little bit about Whitmore this year.
My first experience in the Stake Barn was my friend Lori Fry, and Lori took me back there. I think she was working for Gary that summer, or who she was working for, but she brought me to the Stakes Barn, and as we went around, Running Stag was in the far back right corner, and I hadn't had a ton of experience, around racehorses that way. And he was fascinated. I was wearing a blue blazer with the gold buttons, like a Brooks Brothers blazer. And I could see his head was kind of, as I was moving my hand, he's watching the gold buttons. The next thing I knew, he grabbed the cuff of the sport coat and didn't want to let go. And so he had it became a tug of war to get my wrist back from Running Stag, which I won't forget that. That's pretty funny.
Welcome to the Stakes Barn.
Exactly. The only other bad encounter I had like that was with brother Derek, who bit me on the chest. It came running from the back of the stall at Barn 42 at Derby Week. And I was wearing a purple shirt, and I think it was the shirt that he came, because he didn't seem like he was that tight, but he left a welt on my chest a week it took to stop hurting. so I can honestly say I've been bitten by a horse like a lot of people that have to work around.
I don't think I ever, obviously doing a lot of interviews on the backstretch, as you were talking, doing a lot of interviews on the backstretch and whatnot. I don't interact with them that much. Not for any reason other than I just don't, but I don't walk up and pet them too much or anything. So there isn't the opportunity to take a chunk out of me. So I've never had it happen.
That's probably smart on your part. How was the holiday period? I did look up on television a couple of times and caught you in the afternoon.
Yeah, we kept plugging along. Obviously, Christmas Day off, but other than that, we were pretty much plugging along. Today, I'm actually had the picks in for the one sheet on Capital OTV if people go to the website, but taking today off because I was in New Year's Day. But yeah, we were plugging along. I mean, it was just it was full of great racing, so it was fun to do. Certainly, the 3-year-old races last week. I thought amongst the group there, Dash Attack was the one that kind of impressed me the most last weekend. But it was a great a flight line on opening day at Santa Anita. Obviously, just really impressive. And then I had Terry Finley on with me on Saturday to talk a little bit in review about the race. But that was, I mean, that was super impressive. Could he after the big first effort, could he come back and validate that in the second effort he did? And then they sit off from that in early September until the Malibu. And so could he come back and validate what we saw in the stakes debut, grade one stakes debut? And he absolutely did. So it's going to be fun to see what the game plan is. Terry, you know, was talking that I think some of the post-race articles mentioned it as well. I it looks like two turns will be in his future. So interesting to see what the 2022 season holds for Flightline. But yeah, it was a couple of good weeks of racing, obviously, and we were in the studio covering all of it.
Well, and of course, we talked to John Sadler on Monday, and looks like at least one trip to New York with the Met Mile as the spring goal, the short term, let's call it the intermediate. The intermediate term goal, considering that it's Memorial Day weekend, or I take that back, Belmont Stakes Day. And speaking of Belmont Stakes Day, the news is, I think, out officially. There had been pretty distinct rumors last couple of months that Fox was going to secure the broadcast rights to the Belmont Stakes, and that became official today, if you haven't seen that.
Yeah, and there was the NBC Sports kind of shut down, and I think they're moving some of their sports over to the USA Network. So there was obviously on the television landscape, there was kind of a disruption on the sports side of things, certainly. And given what, you know, Fox and the team up with Naira they've had over the last few years and how successful it's been, I don't think it was any shock that it was going to move in that direction.
No, and this is not, you know, for those that are aghast that this is basically a very similar scenario to that period when ABC had secured the separate broadcast rights to the Belmont property. So it's not. You know, it's not that unusual. It's and given given Fox's presence on a near daily basis now with America's Day at the Races and Saratoga Live, it really is a natural fit. We'll certainly reach out to Tony Alavato and get Tony's thoughts and or Mike Mulvihill. But Fox has been a fabulous partner to
see it with given what was happening in Saratoga the last few years. I mean, the NBC presence up there had diminished because Fox is there every day, and so why shouldn't they be allowed and they'd be more than happy to have them, you know, cover the big races up there. And so NBC was kind of being cut back up at Saratoga, so you could kind of see where it was all going. And they do a great job, and they're doing it every day, so more power to them.
Well, that brings us to what you do every day, which is handicap. What do we got today? You mentioned the one sheet. What'd you look at? Tampa and Gulfstream?
I did. A little Tampa, a little Gulfstream. I was looking before I got you to see if I had anything super clever today. And I looked at Tampa, and I don't really have anything super clever over there. I'm just kind of flipping through the pages at the Gulfstream to see if you have anything in particular you want to look at?
No, I did not. I'll swing into action tomorrow, but Gus has got Gulfstream and Tampa action, and they're updated, and they're both at the website. He looked at the late pick fives. So you got that to consider. So if you've got Gulfstream going.
Well, what do we have, like 4 minutes here? Maybe I'll just give some
Three minutes. Two and a half.
Late pick four at Tampa, but I'll go through pretty quickly here. It kicks off in race number six. In the sixth race, I have a 3-8, 2-1. I thought the seven was interesting, too. You know, you get 4-1 on Indy Ride, but I think if you go to that race two back, you can kind of key on that and hang your hat on that. That was at six. The follow-up not only was a condition up, so got some experience there, but it was also at seven. Now splits the difference. So I think Indy Ride at 4-1 on the morning line, interesting. So in the sixth, 3-8, 2-1. In the seventh race, a mile on the grass for conditional claimers, 4-2, 3-9. Spiritual King, 5-2 on the morning line. I can see the horse clicking down early speed, and I think probably moves back to the comfort zone price-wise. So seems logical there. But Candy Kingdom could be playable. That one's 7-2 on the morning line. I can almost see that one floating up, though, moving back up the ladder a little bit. And I think Evidence with Sammy Camacho is playable. 7th at Tampa, 4-2, 3-9. 8th race at Tampa, 6-5, 7-3. The 6 and the 5 are kind of interchangeable. And they were right next to each other in the last race. But I tilted towards Fru Fru Zan being a little more lately raced and maybe a little more upside potential. If you're looking for an alternative at a price, I thought Tappet's Girl, third start down at Tampa, and could be primed for a good effort. So the eighth at Tampa, 6-5, 7-3. And we wind things up at Tampa in the ninth at about quarter after 4, 4-11, 9-5. The first time starter, the one, is also maybe a little playable. But I went with Had Right on top. A couple of second place finishes against similar, should have that one set up. If the 11 gets in, and I checked the scratches earlier, and I think the 11 will get in, Ballandieri, first-time starter for Mike Deeney, could be interesting as well at 10-1. So 9th at Tampa, 4-11, 9-5. If the 11 doesn't get in, take a look at the 1.
Interesting. Gus actually has got the 1. You mentioned the 1, Bam Bam Warrior. Gus put that one on top with Jose Ferrar, 8-1. So... If you've got interest and Gus put him on top, maybe that's a go. So use the 1 as well. Gus's action is up there and at our website and Seth at the CapitalOTB.com and Seth Merrow too on your Twitter. Seth, we'll see you soon. We'll talk next week. I appreciate it. Happy healthy.
Sounds good. Happy holidays. Happy New Year to everybody.
Seth Merrow, folks, and earlier, of course, the visit from Michael Dickinson and Dick Powell for some HK. And that horse, by the way, paid $63.60. And Sid, of course, as well. Frank Hopf and Nick Tamarow as SHRP kicks off tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-501. 6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.